Hello, and welcome to the Biotech 2050 podcast. Biotech 2050 is a think tank chronicling the disruptions changing the biotech industry over the next several decades. Check out our website at biotech2050.com or on your favorite podcast listening platform. I'm Rahul Chaturvedi, co-founder of this podcast and today's host. I'm also the founder and CEO of Clora. Clora is a talent marketplace that enables biotechs to build world-class teams while keeping fixed costs low. You can check us out at clora.com. I'm very excited to welcome Ted Love, most recently CEO of Global Blood Therapeutics, which was acquired by Pfizer, and a current chairman of Bio. Thanks so much for joining us today, Ted.
Rahul, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Great. So Ted, to kick us off and to set the context for the conversation, would love if you could talk to us about your early parts of your career, what got you interested in biotech, and the arc of your career since then.
Happy to do that. As many people know, I grew up on a farm in Alabama. Born in 1959. I was very lucky, even though I grew up honestly in the Jim Crow segregated South, that I was a good student and really loved learning and loved challenge. Our local doc was really the inspiration for me to think about using my interest in math and science in a way that would affect people in my community. I ended up going to medical school at Yale, where there was a lot of encouragement for me to go into academic medicine, which is what I began to pursue. I ended up at Mass General, and my mentor ended up leaving Harvard to go to Bristol Myers Squibb, where he tried to get me to follow him, but I ended up going to Genentech in 1992 and building my career starting there, which was an amazing place to start my career. I really looked at Genentech as being the Haverford, if you will, which is where I went to college, of biotech or the biopharma industry. It was big enough that I could learn everything that I needed to learn, but it was small enough that I could get a really intimate experience. And after a number of years at Genentech, where I was involved in development of some of our most important drugs like Herceptin, Rituxan, TPA, Tenecteplase, Xolaire, I left and got involved in building companies, initially at Theravance, later at HiSeq, Nivello, then at Onyx, and then finally at GBT, which, as you noted, was acquired by Pfizer. And GBT was probably my proudest achievement because it really focused on a population of patients who had been dramatically ignored. And in fact, I saw them being discriminated against when I was a medical student and when I was a resident at the Mass General. I really felt that nobody had been looking out for those patients. So when I got the opportunity to get involved in trying to do something really innovative, really a breakthrough for these patients, it was very exciting. And I'm just so proud of the success that we collectively had at GBT. And I say we collectively because this is a very hard business, as you know, Rahul, and it takes a village to do what we did at GBT. And boy, we had an amazing village. We did a great job of collaborating with the FDA. We did a great job of collaborating with the patient community, the academic community. It took us all to do what GBT did in bringing a very innovative therapy to patients in a very short amount of time that's now available to help patients around the world. And we have a second generation product that at least looks even more exciting that hopefully Pfizer will make available to patients around the world even sooner than we could have at GBT. So I've had a blessed career. And again, I'm very excited to be here to talk to you today about all of that, including Bio.
Wonderful. Thanks, Ted. I'm curious, as you look back on your career, and perhaps there are some listeners that are in an academic setting right now and thinking about going over to biotech or pharma, is there any advice or to your own kind of mental model for how to approach making a transition from academia to biotech that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think the number one advice I would give people is focus on what you really love. Focus on the environment that you thrive in. Part of my decision to come to industry was the capacity to use good scientific training, good medical training in an environment really where collaboration is key. And when I say collaboration, I really mean that you're not really focused on who's in charge. You're really focused on the mission, the objective, and how we get there. And of course, if you're a natural leader, you may become the leader of that process, but you're really focused on the bigger issue, the bigger mission. You're focused on collaboration. You embrace that collaboration. And that really does lead to the kind of dynamics that were very helpful to me when I made the transition from MGH to Genentech. Not everybody makes the transition as well, to be very honest. I think that, you know, we're trained in medicine many times to kind of be in charge. While there's a role for that, particularly in an operating theater, for example, or in a cath lab, as another example, in the drug development environment, there are people around the table who know a lot more than you know about the topic that may be the most important of the day. For example, tox may be the issue. And I'm not a tox expert, but I've got tox people around me at Genentech who are phenomenal. Biostatistics may be the real issue that we need to crack. We had great, amazing biostatisticians at Genentech. And I embraced that. I actually loved the fact that my job was really to make sure that we stayed together as a team, that we function really, really well as a team, and that everybody on that team felt like they were respected, they were valued, and that really created that dynamic that led to outsized performance. The same was true at GBT, by the way. I think you can replicate this, but again, if you really don't function well in that kind of environment, industry is perhaps not the best place for someone who's academically trained as I was.
And Ted, would love to talk about you as a CEO. And, you know, you also sit on a number of boards. If you could think back to, you know, the first time you took that CEO role from, you know, the Genentechs of the world and so on, curious, what was one non-obvious adaptation that you had to make when you first took that CEO role? That's part one. And then the second part is curious how you think you've changed as a CEO from when you first started at GBT to when the transaction happened, and just your own evolution. And I'm also asking, quite frankly, for my own personal curiosity and how constant need for CEOs to be evolving as companies scale.
Absolutely. Well, the first CEO job I took was to be CEO of a company called HighSeek. It was actually a company that had many, many problems and needed to be turned around. That's not why I took the job. The reason I took the job is because I was recruited by George Rathman, who was the founding CEO of Amgen. And in my opinion, was really the person that built Amgen into the company that it is today. And the reason I did it is that I felt like George was going to be an amazing teacher and an amazing mentor. And he was everything I expected and more, quite frankly. A few of the things that I learned very quickly in the job role, directly assigned to your question, is number one, you know, it's a pretty lonely position. Even though I had George, I couldn't really talk to George about everything. I did talk to him about more than most people could talk with their chairman because of George being such a special person. But there is a loneliness in the CEO position that people should be prepared for when they take on that position. The other position, and I was just actually chatting with another CEO this morning about this, is that the enormous burden of responsibility that you can feel in that position. I felt it. I honestly wish sometimes that I didn't feel such a burden in that position, but I really had no choice. I felt an enormous burden to deliver for the patients that we were committed to. I felt an enormous burden to look out for every employee that had joined us in our initiative. I felt an enormous burden for the investors that had invested in the company, and I felt like betted on me personally. So there's a lot of burden, and that translates into many times tossing and turning at night, maybe not even sleeping some nights. I wish I actually been able to kind of tone that down a little bit, but I couldn't. And in many ways, honestly, that may have been something that helped me in the end to be successful. But anyone taking on that job, I think, should understand that there's a loneliness. And I think there's a big burden that you need to accept when you take on that position.
Yeah, that certainly resonates, Ted. Thanks for sharing that. Now, I would love to switch gears and talk about your time at GBT. And perhaps for starters, would love if you could walk us through the evolution of the company. And what do you think in the long run ended up differentiating GBT from so many other biotechs out there?
Let me start with the latter and I'll come back to the first part of it. So I think one of the things that did distinguish GBT is that we were a completely mission-focused company. Everyone at that company, all 600 of us, we knew why we were there. We were there for the patient, and everything we did came back to the patient. That was very unifying for all of us. It was very inspiring for all of us. When we had conflicts or we had challenges, and we did, we always put those things back into perspective of what we're trying to do for the patient, not only in the U.S., but the patients around the world suffering from this devastating disease. So I think we had an unusual amount of focus on our mission, and that led to not only tremendous success, it led to just enormous satisfaction in what we were able to do as a group of individuals, as an organization. What made GBT special in the beginning, and maybe what even attracted me there? I was approached because the company was started by Third Rock Ventures. Many partners there knew me for many, many years, going back to my days at the Mass General or going back to my days at Genentech. And they understood that sickle cell disease in the U.S. is primarily an African-American disease. About 90%+ of the patients are African-Americans. And they wanted me to run the company. They wanted me to try to build a company. The other thing that was important to me is that I could understand the science. And the science that GBT was founded on was actually in many ways very simple, but very, very innovative as well. And maybe I'll just take a minute and explain that people with sickle cell have a devastating disease, which cuts decades off their life and tremendously compromises their lives. People with sickle trait have one bad gene and one good gene, and they're perfectly healthy, even though half of their hemoglobin has this mutation on it. So what that tells you is that if you could make half of the hemoglobin behave in a way that's non-pathological, then you could essentially turn sickle cell into sickle trait. And that's what we were doing. We were making small molecules, which could be formulated, of course, as daily pills that you would take, and the molecules would be absorbed and bind to your sickle hemoglobin. And once the sickle hemoglobin had oxbryta attached to it, it would no longer polymerize. It would no longer aggregate into these rods, which is the molecular basis of sickle cell disease. And we hypothesized that if we could tie up half of the hemoglobin being bound to oxbryta, we could essentially turn sickle cell into sickle trait. That's a big, big idea. It turns out that the first molecule that we made, oxbryta, does turn about a quarter of the hemoglobin and the non-polymerizing hemoglobin, and it's very effective at mitigating the destruction of the red cells, and we think the downstream consequence of the disease. But we couldn't quite get half of it, and that's why we made the second generation molecule, which is about 15 times as potent. So we think even with lowering the dose, maybe as much as tenfold, we will be able to get patients into this. Half of their hemoglobin does not polymerize, and we think we could effectively convert their sickle cell disease into sickle trait. So it was a big idea. Of course, all big ideas have a lot of challenges about how you execute, and we did a great job, honestly, from the medicinal chemistry, all of the toxicology, all of the manufacturing, all of the clinical drug development, all of the regulatory interactions around the globe. All of this was very, very hard to do, but it was doable. It was achievable. And we did it all, and we did it all in record time. And we made a second generation molecule. And that's a little bit of a story in itself. Roy Vagelos once told me that if you do something great, Ted, somebody else will come along and learn from you and do it even better. So I would say at GBT all the time, we're doing something great and people are going to take note and they're going to try to do it better, and we're not going to let them. We're going to make oxbryta obsolete ourselves. So we continued to invest millions and millions of dollars each year on trying to make something that was not slightly better, but an order of magnitude better than oxbryta. And we succeeded, and that molecule is now called 601. So there's a theme here of going after excellence and then pushing yourself to be even more excellent. And that was a common theme LGBT and a common theme at how we operated and how we executed. And it was always in the name of patients.
Seems like you were able to both execute on short-term goals as well as effectively disrupt yourselves in the long run to make sure that there wasn't any strong competition. I'm curious, you know, as you think about the execution piece of this, and you mentioned, you know, doing so in record time, are there any learnings around what you think, in addition to the company being patient-driven and that there was an unmet need that you were trying to solve for, but perhaps from an operational or management perspective that you think drove that sense of urgency in a sincere way that then resulted in getting these approvals so quickly?
I think it was the people that we brought into the company. George and I used to talk about what really matters in these companies. And I ended up coming up with this little line that is the three P's. You got to get the three P's right. And you got to constantly monitor the three P's. So the first of the three P's is the people around the table. I've seen extraordinary people turn something that was bound to fail into something extraordinary. I've seen people who are more mediocre take something that could have been exceptional and make it mediocre. So the people are vital. And if you get the wrong people in your organization, you have to recognize that and fix that very, very quickly. We focused very much on the team at the top, and then the team at the top focused on their team at the top. And we cascaded that through the company to try to have excellence from top to bottom. And we did. The second P is, of course, the products that you're making. The products are the jewels. And ultimately, we're going to be valued on whether we make important products. And then the last one I called pennies. It's actually not pennies. It's millions of dollars. In the case of GBT, we raised over $1.5 billion in our journey to build the company. So you got to have the resources, the money to do that. Since then, as I've gotten older and wiser, I've added a fourth P, and that's patience. And that's everything you're doing is really focused on the last and arguably the most important of the P's.
Ted, one follow-up question. We talked about the ability to raise capital. We're recording this in the summer of 2023, and the biotech market and the capital markets have shifted quite a bit over the last 2 years or so. I'm curious, if you were running a biotech currently, how would the current markets inform how you're approaching drug development and team building? Any advice that you would like to share with the audience?
I think it probably wouldn't affect me that much in some ways. I think if you're building a great company, you've got to be disciplined. And I think this environment is really, really, really challenging you to be disciplined. We were very disciplined at GBT. We had all sorts of gates for when we would hire new people, open new programs, spend more money. So I think today's environment requires discipline, but we tried to execute discipline even when we were building GBT. I think today's environment requires focus. We're very focused at GBT. There were all sorts of opportunities to go into different areas. And we just said, look, if we're going to really, really, really be the very best in this area of sickle cell, we may need to focus on that. So everything we did really came back to sickle cell. And again, I think that focus in today's market could be important. And the last thing I would say is, I think even in difficult markets, Raul, the best ideas will get funded. They may get funded at a lower price, but I think they will get funded. And again, at GBT, I think we were focused on something where the science was very compelling. There was, strangely enough, a lot of human genetics that reinforce what we were doing at GBT. And there were old molecules that had been explored, but ultimately not developed, that reinforced our story. Our story and our science was reinforced from many kind of orthogonal sets of data and experiences. So I think we would have been funded even in the toughest of markets, but perhaps at lower prices.
Great. Ted, on this topic of the dynamic environment within biotech, would like to switch gears and now talk about your role at Bio. And love if you could talk to us about what is your mandate as chairman of Bio, and what are some of the opportunities and challenges that you'll be addressing?
Well, let me just start by saying that the reason I am excited about being chairman of Bio is that I love our industry. I really love the idea of taking knowledge, information in science, and translating that into innovations that affect human health and innovations that make our society better, stronger, and safer. And that's really what bio is all about. So we are about protecting the innovative ecosystem to benefit patients and benefit our society and our country. In terms of my personal priorities, when I gave my acceptance speech at bio in June, I stated my priorities, and I'm happy to restate them again here. One of the most important things for me is to change the narrative of our industry. I could not be more proud of what I've done in my career and what I've done with my fascination as a kid with science and math in my career. And I think it's unfortunate that many people don't have the understanding of our industry, and they mischaracterize our industry in the way that it's often mischaracterized. So I want to reframe the narrative of our industry and really get people focused on understanding how we are the industry that's poised to feed the world. We are the industry that's poised to help us from the future pandemic. We're the industry to help us deal with climate change and the heating world that we're facing today. It is our industry that's going to save the world, and people need to embrace that and understand that. And we need to do a better job of explaining it. That's one mission I'm committed to. We make great therapies. I'm speaking right now particularly about medicines and healthcare. But again, bio is about, you know, biofuels. We're about agricultural products. We're about a lot of things. But we need to make sure that we're making all of our inventions widely accessible. And by the way, it's more than price. Many times accessibility is free drug. We're one of the few industries in this world that gives away so much free drug. And again, people don't even know how much free drug we're giving away. We need to continue to do more to make access even broader. And we need to make sure the world understands what we're doing to make things broader. At GBT, we weren't even profitable. We were not even profitable. We were losing money every quarter. 15% of the drug was given away. That was because we're committed to patients. Who is not profitable and gives away half of their, and gives away 15% of their product? And then the last thing is for us to deal with the challenges that are coming against us in terms of the political and regulatory environment. Specifically, I think about the FTC and how the FTC is putting up barriers to us doing deals, doing mergers and acquisitions. These things are actually critical to the innovative ecosystem that we have. Pfizer not only now has great products from GBT that they can make available around the world more quickly than GBT could have, which is going to help patients. Number two, the investors in GBT now have capital from that acquisition that they could redeploy into creating new companies. And our employees, many of whom now have gone into new companies and are trying to build new companies again. So the idea that acquisitions are anti-competitive, block innovation, is absolutely crazy. And we need to explain to the FTC and to everyone that we can't be in a situation where this process of mergers and acquisition is being impaired. And then finally, I would say the IRA. The IRA was well-intended in terms of trying to make therapies more accessible to patients. That's something at bio we are passionately excited about. But unfortunately, the way IRA will operate will potentially do more harm than good, particularly if it's not implemented properly. People don't understand that the biotech and the pharmaceutical companies don't actually set the price that patients pay. So you could lower their charges so much they go out of business. Expense doesn't go down. You have not helped the patient. And unfortunately, IRA, aside from some elements to limit out-of-pocket costs, which I'm excited about, bio is excited about, much of what IRA is doing is simply hurting the companies that innovate and not really helping the patient. So we need to make sure that we fix some of the elements of IRA that can be fixed, that we implement it in a way that's least harmful and maybe most helpful to patients. But we've got work to do with IRA and the FTC as well. So those are my priorities: patient access, reframing who our industry is, and dealing with some of the regulatory and other barriers that are threatening innovation?
Yeah, certainly lots of work to be done, Ted, but also those are inspirational words in terms of fulfilling the promise of our sector and the lack of nuance around the conversation about biotech. So thank you for taking that on and for sharing your approach. Before we let you run, Ted, one last question. I've asked you to reflect a bit already today, but one last time, if we could ask you to reflect and think about your younger self, and given all that you've now experienced, what's one piece of advice you wish you could provide your younger self, knowing all that you now know?
It would probably be to make sure that I take time to enjoy myself and enjoy my life and enjoy my family. I've worked very hard, and that came with a lot of sacrifice, some of which is required to drive success. But I think that if I were doing it all over again, I probably would double click on some of that. The other thing is, I've always been philanthropic. I've always recognized, since I was right out of college, the need to try to pay it back. But I think I would have potentially been even more confident in my capacity to be successful, and I might have been even more philanthropic with larger quantities when I was younger.
Great. Well, Ted, thank you for sharing a bit of your personal journey. I'm sure there's lots more to cover there, but really appreciate your time and looking forward to your continued success as chairman of Bio.
Thank you, Roel. We will not be stopped. We've got to make sure we innovate and we do our job to save and protect the world.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Biotech 2050. This episode is hosted by me, Rahul Chaturvedi. If you enjoyed this episode of Biotech 2050, please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. Also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Biotech2050Pod. Again, that's Biotech2050Pod. Until next time.